Calling all thrill seekers and party monsters. Get ready for a night of wicked fun at the Hell of a Halloween Party. Join us on October 19th, 2023 at the Triple Nickel Pub, Portland's creepiest haunt, for a spine-tingling extravaganza you won't want to miss. This one-of-a-kind drag show is strictly 21+, so prepare to unleash your inner demons and let the spirits guide you. Hosted by the enchanting Coco Gem Holiday and the bewitching Autumn Rains, this night promises to be a cauldron of mesmerizing performances and hair-raising entertainment. Prepare to be spellbound by the captivating Astrid Aurelia, a finalist from the Boulay Brothers' Dragula Titan, as she bewitches the stage with her dark magic. But wait, there's more. Our monstrous cast features the devilishly talented Karaoke, the electrifying Wolfgang X, the magnetic Crucifix Magnetic, the haunting Duchess Dusted, the enchanting Cherry Blossom, the smoldering Destiny Smokes, the mysterious Umbra, and even Sue from Corporate will be joining the frightful fun. And let's not forget, it's Wolfgang's birthday show. Help us celebrate the otherworldly occasion in style as we raise our glasses to the nightmarish festivities. Don't miss your chance to compete in our spine-chilling costume contest. Dress to impress in your most macabre attire and stand a chance to win fiendishly fabulous prizes. Our expert judge panel will be holding their breath waiting to crown the most horrifying fabulous creature of the night. To keep your bones rattling and your spirits soaring, we have the incredible DJ Career Cup spinning spine-chilling beats that will make you dance until the witching hour. So grab your broomsticks and get ready to move like the undead. Doors open at 9 o'clock p.m., so arrive early and claim your spot before the ghosts do. Triple Nickel Pub, located at 3646 Southeast Belmont Street, will be your haunted sanctuary for this unforgettable night. Pre-sale tickets are going fast at $25, available now at www.thecdsdrag.com/hell. That's www.thecdsdrag.com/hell, H-E-L-L. But don't fret if you miss out. Tickets will also be available at the door. So mark your calendars, summon your friends, and prepare for a hell of a Halloween party that will leave you screaming for more. Get ready to embrace the spooky season like never before. We can't wait to see you there. Hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. So today I decided to wear, I'm actually wearing my Camp Wanakiki shirt, and nothing else. That's just because, you know, I want to feel free in my fantasy, and I've been reliving my memories from that. So today, the hot button topic in the community is the Nest Lounge is canceling all of their drag events. It said, we had, their post said on Instagram, we had to make a decision, an unfortunate decision, which is to end all drag shows here at the Nest. At the end of October, this was not an easy or fun conclusion to make. We hope to bring it back in some way once summer comes around. Our sincerest apologies, and we hope to still have everyone come in and enjoy our bar. The interesting thing about this post is the comment that they wrote underneath it. It said, there was no easy choice. This was no easy choice, y'all. With the amount of drag shows in our community, there's a lot, exclamation point. We just can't keep up, unfortunately. We truly love having having drag shows here. So until next time, these are the last shows to check out. Don't say we didn't warn ya. I also forgot to add, the last Treetop Trivia with Sativa will be at 10 on October 30th. So the thing about this post, and I do have a lot of feelings about the Nest, in general, but what I want to say about this post is they turned off the comments on this post, and I don't know what that means. I think that they were on originally, but they have since turned off the comments on this post, and a lot of people on the internet are getting upset because of the phrases like, there's a lot, or the amount of drag shows in our community, there's a lot. We just can't keep up, unfortunately. What this is saying, so because this post is ambiguous without a lot of an explanation, what people are saying are, wait, why are we canceling it? If drag is bringing you business, what's the issue? Or is it because it's the winter season and, you know, a lot of the shows do happen on the patio? Or is it because, you know, they can't keep up with the budget of drag shows, or they don't like to compete with other drag shows? The way it says community, do they mean the Ness community or the general Portland community? Something like that. And people are just confused. I have my own thoughts and opinions, but that's not necessarily for this reporting on that. It's just the hot button topic of the day, and that's why I'm bringing it up. So I guess let me know in the comments, what do you think it's about? Do you think they're ending because of X or Y or Z? You know, and then also keep in mind, it's always really, really sad. And I've said this a lot. It's always really, really sad when a venue stops doing drag-related events. With the, you know, the over 80 or 100 something drag artists that exist in the Portland greater area, that, you know, we all need work. We all need to perf we all want to perform. We all want to be out there doing the thing that we need to do. And so when you have a space and there's like, you know, 10 or 12 events that are listed on this post. You know, and that's work. And I bet they're always booking like a couple of people or four people. That's like a lot of people who are out of work, right? So keep that in mind as we have these discussions. You know, it's sad. We don't know what necessarily is happening, like the interpersonal conversations that happened with the Nest. But one thing is for certain, that these artists are going to need opportunities. And so we should be more forthcoming with that for my other producer friends who may or may not be listening to this. And I want to leave it on that message. Let's make sure we're getting out there and helping these people get back into spaces so they can continue performing. Yeah. So, how are you doing, listeners? Let me know in the comments.
Welcome to Denton, USA, the home of happiness. All of us have heard of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but have you heard of its sequel or its equal, Shock Treatment? Marla Darling, the CDS Drag, and the Alberta Abbey, with a grant award from Prosper Portland, presents the science fiction double feature 1975's The Rocky Horror Picture Show and 1981's Shock Treatment, a rare opportunity to see both films back to back at the Alberta Abbey, located at 126 Northeast Alberta Street. The science fiction double feature features an inclusive sh shadow cast of BIPOC, queer, trans, and non-binary, and differently abled upcoming drag and burlesque artists based here in Portland. The event will be on Sunday, October 29th, doors at 6 o'clock p.m., Shock Treatment at 7 o'clock p.m., The Rocky Horror Picture Show, 10 o'clock p.m. Both shows hosted by Marla Darling, with unique pre-shows for both films. Prop bags will be available for $7. Don that little black dress and get ready to do the time warp again. Tickets available on Eventbrite.
It's a podcast. Check it out. Tune into what they tell you, podcast. Check it
out. And we are back, listeners, and it is with great pleasure that I introduce to the podcast, I have Savannah O. Bennington on the call. Say hi, Savannah.
How you doing, Coco? How is everything?
Oh my gosh, everything is fantastic. Everything is good. Everything is Gucci. Do we still use
Yes.
Gucci? I don't know if we
Yes,
still use
we still
Gucci.
do that. We still do that.
I'm old.
Well, honey, you know, Gucci is always has always been good, okay?
That's tea. That's tea.
A lot of things will change, but Gucci will always be good.
I love that. So the first question I ask everybody is, please, like, tell us your drag name and how long you've been doing drag, and where did your drag name come from?
My name is Savannah O. Bennington. I am the Queen of Fun. I've been doing drag since just after the pandemic, actually. I mean, I've produced things in the past, but you know, my drag journey really started after the pandemic. You know, I had been going to drag shows in Portland for quite some time, just because I stayed up in Vancouver, and you know, you would always come down to the gay mecca that is Portland, Oregon. And yeah, so I was inspired by a lot of different things in my drag journey, but my name really comes from Savannah, comes from obviously Savannah, Georgia, where the Lady Chablis, she was the queen that reigned there. And then my last name, Bennington, came from a childhood home in Maryland, a housing development named the Bennington. I had a lot of great memories there growing up.
Oh, I did not know that. I actually didn't know that was a really involved name, because I am a three named drag artist, which a little bit of drag history is like, it was back in the days of like Nicole Page Brooks. Like, it was a huge thing for people to have like lots of drag names, and every part of the name meant something else. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to see that you kind of like brought that tradition back accidentally or intentionally.
Yeah.
So let's get into, why did you start producing?
The thing is that before the pandemic, you know, and I think you know this, the entertainment landscape looked very, very different. Queer spaces, there weren't as many of them. You know, a lot of drag happened in just a few spaces that were considered to be safe, really. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after the pandemic, a lot of things changed. And one of the things I wanted to do was produce shows that had, you know, I had a vision for a lot of different types of drag, and I was very fortunate to be able to start working with people who were very different and very unique in a lot of different ways. And so that show just kind of my very first show came together just like, and it helps that I did cast like 12 performers in my very first show.
Good gosh, so many people. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a mess. When you look back upon your career, you can look very precisely at things that you can just be like, yeah, I probably won't ever do that again, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's been a hell of a journey.
Like a big production or something like that.
Yeah, 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 obviously. I mean, I enjoy working with a lot of different people, but, you know, I've learned that sometimes less is more.
No, it can be, definitely. I know that when you have more people in a show, right, this is pretty standard for folks. If you have a lot of more people in a show, like if they all bring one person, right, then, you know, that could give you, like at a show with 12 people, that gets you 12 people in the seats right there. And if it's like a 50-person venue, like that already makes it start looking more full, which more people want to show up to an event that looks full, right? And so there is some method to that madness. But then when you have to think about paying all of those people, then you're like, crap, I don't know if I have a... Like, let's say we're paying all of $100. I don't have $1,200 for this 50-person menu.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so I definitely get that. So let's talk about, because like I bet everybody who's going to listen to this episode wants us to get into some tea, and I want to get there, but I like to start off with also some of the accolades. So you recently did a Pride show at the Get Down. One of their few Pride shows. So tell me about that process. Tell me about how you felt about it. Tell me about how you went, like how you felt like the day before and like all of that. So let's go there.
Well, every show can be very terrifying when you first start, because you're always worried about, making sure that everyone has a good time, whether that be the venue, whether that be the audience, whether that be the performer. You just want to make sure everyone has a good time. But, you know, you also have to worry about, you know, making sure there's enough money to pay everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. So like the game of drag shows is really, about, telling a story and visualizing a concept, but it's also a very economic story too. You know, you have to make sure that the money is there for everyone to have a good time, you know, for the bar and for the performers. And Rise was no different because, you know, that venue is very big, actually. And so, like, what 200 people look like in your home bar is not the same as what 200 people looks like in that venue. You know what I mean? It can still look empty with 200 people, but you want to hit that mark. It was terrifying the entire time because you want to make sure you're doing everything right. You want to make sure you're doing right by people. So it was absolutely terrifying the entire time, especially up until the day. You know, I was very lucky to get that night, you know, Pride night, you know. But also, it's very scary because everything's happening that night, right? And so you can only hope to get, you know, hope that your methods get you, you know, a piece of, you know, of that night so that, you know, you can have an audience there to enjoy themselves.
Right. No, I get that because, you know, I have been in the Get Down for a bunch of different events. I go for their Kiki Balls as well, and it's a really great time. And it's a large space. Like, even if there's like 150 people in that bitch, makes it still look empty. Like, it just... Yeah. It's just because if they're in one room, because it's so for the listeners who've never been to the Get Down, and for mine who live out of state, the Get Down is like it's an underground venue, and the like you go into one big room that has the bar, and then it's like, remember those like old skating rinks from back in the day? It kind of goes into a space like that, into a different room, and so it's all connected, but it's just very large. Like I think it's a. I think the venue capacity is 400, I think, maybe. I don't know.
450 people. Yeah, 450 people is what they say.
Yeah, and you know it's hard to get 450 people to show up for anything. And, like, this is an actually interesting point. I think I probably brought it up a couple episodes ago that Dahlia Cash, who's the creator of Melange, co-creator of Melange, had actually said, like, and actually Sunny Verbena actually just posted this online like yesterday or today, basically saying, like, hey, y'all need to stop waiting till the last second for pre-sale tickets. Like, y'all need to buy that stuff early.
You know, I've been selling tickets for over 2 years now. And I, you know, they give you information when people buy, you know, when people buy tickets. Mm-hmm. You get to see, you know, what it is like to sell those tickets. And for the longest time, pre-sale tickets would just shoot through the roof the last 24 hours. Like just that last day on up until, and you could sell 80% of your show really in those last 24 hours, you know, and it's very nerve wracking as a producer to do that. But you know, it's the nature of the business.
It is. And it's terrifying. And let me tell you, cause like, I just had my Land Insider show on October 1st and that I lucked out.
Congratulations, by the way, that was a great job.
It was a fun, good show. And I partnered with Suki's Bar and Karaoke. But the thing is, I that was an anomaly. I pretty much almost sold out within like the first week of launching promotion. But I have other events that are happening this month that are doing the very standard, even with headliners, you know, like, maybe a ticket or two is coming in a day, and it's like making me super nervous. Like even me being in this business for 11 years promoting and doing events, like still getting that, like where I'm like, ooh, I need to start buying these tickets.
Yeah, it's nerve wracking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Even for 100% venue.
Absolutely. It's nerve wracking at every level, because the thing about it is that, you know, we create these visions and we create these budgets. And the thing about it is that you want these, you know, unfortunately, the only way you can kind of grade those things is how many tickets did you sell? That's the way it's graded, if it were a success or not. And you could have the most immaculate concept, but unfortunately, it's only going to be graded against how many tickets did you sell? You know what I'm saying? And so it's just one of those things. I've seen many shows that I thought were great. I thought they were phenomenal. And no one showed up. So they just kind of disappeared. And it's just like, you know, it's unfortunate. But it's a hard metric.
I did have my very first, I pride myself on, I've never canceled a show in my entire drag career. And I did for the first time ever recently for low ticket sales. I'm at a brand new venue. Literally, they've only been open for like 3 months, and my brunch is there. And the second month that we did it, like it was like 3 days away, and we had sold like one table and like two individual seats for this really large space. And I was just like, oh, we need to cancel. I was like, it's not in a foot traffic area. So I was like, we need to cancel. And I was pushing the ticket sales, not as hard as I normally do, because I had some vacation time planned. But yeah, it blew up. But I had to let my cast know, because I had a recurring cast. I said, y'all need to promote this show better if you want it to continue, because baby, it won't continue.
I totally get that. You know, September, I had to cancel 3 shows in one weekend because it was the weekend of the Rose City Comic-Con. Oktoberfest was happening. There was Folsom was happening down in San Francisco. I mean, there was just so many things, and it was good weather. And so, you know, you can fight a lot of things, but you're not fighting good weather. That's not happening. Okay. Mother Nature going to win every time.
Oh yeah, no, it's true. People in Portland, if it's like a little bit sunny, they're gonna head to the, they're gonna hike in, they're gonna look at some water, they're gonna do it, they're gonna do all the things. And I get it, like I get it too. I'm one of those people when it's nice weather, I don't want to go do stuff. But the thing is, I'm a bar rat. Like I love being out and drinking and having a good time in city. But I'm an anomaly here. Like they'll leave, they won't show up.
Oh yeah, and let me tell you something. Most of my base is lesbians, and lesbians love to camp. So, honey, some good weather and I'm done. That's it. That's the whole weekend.
Yep. You know, it's funny. I never actually even thought about your crowd dynamic. So, because you know, I've been to a bunch of your shows and I never, like, because when I go as a, like, a performer, right, I don't necessarily care about who's in the audience. But when I go as a patron, I also don't care about who's in the audience. I care about my beverage. So I've never really looked at your dynamic. And I guess it's probably something I should, but I didn't realize that your crowd was mostly lesbians.
Well, the thing is, when I still work there. I started out of a lesbian bar. So most of my audience has been women or lesbians or, I don't know, like people from, you know, North Portland, Vancouver, you know, it's, you know, we have so many things going on, but what it amounts to, I mean, I have a large female audience and, you know, it's been a blessing. Because I haven't had to really tailor my vision towards what commercial drag looks like, you know, we've never had to do that. And so we've been able to work with, you know, artists, you know, different unique types of entertainers, you know, and the art is normally and generally it is 100% celebrated, honored and supported. And I really like that. You know, up until we did Rise, I hadn't really done club drag. Most of my drag has been theater drag, bar drag, camp drag, you know, those things of, you know, those elements of entertainment, you know?
Let me ask you this though. Then like, so, cause funny thing is I actually had merged out of Queer Spaces a little while ago, for some of the things that I produce. And I do love me a good dive bar. I love messing with the straights. They're some of my favorites.
Absolutely.
But what do you like better so far? Because now you've done the big stage, right, for Rise. You still have your spot over at Escape Bar and Grill. You do Underbar, too, which is becoming a lot more queer, right? And so where do you like?
Vancouver's only gay bar.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you like? What do you prefer?
You know, I came up in I came up as a karaoke jockey. I was a KJ. I did when I got to Escape. That's the function that I served. I was their KJ. But I always had like my personality, so it was always just like having a big party and such. And you know, our first 5 years at Escape were magical. I mean, it was standing room only for 5 years, 5 summers. It was absolutely crazy. And then I went away for a little while and I came back and, you know, just as the pandemic happened. And then I started working again after the pandemic was, you know, done. Well, what they say is done. Since then, you know, we've had to work at it more, you know, people, the whole dynamic of what going out looks like has changed. You know, before the pandemic, you were out to 2 a.m. You know, you know, and after pandemic, forget about it. You know, people aren't staying out that late. I mean, most people aren't staying out that late. And so when I started putting together, you know, my first show, I was like, you know, we're going to do this show from 9 to 11 because I'm thinking about my crowd. My crowd doesn't want to be out that late. They want to have their fun for 2 hours. And so when I first started my very first show, it was not what the stereotypical drag show on that format. It was quite literally the show started at 9. Honey, we started at 9. And the show ended at 11. Honey, we end at 11. Okay. We are in and out. You know what I mean? But you give your all and you give your best in those hours that you have them, you know? And so we were, I mean, I love it. I love bar drag. I love performers moving around a bar and making it that, you know, for, you know, 3 minutes, some of them 5.5 minutes, God bless them, you know, but for that time, that audience is there. They can move through that audience. And, you know, I feel like that kind of drag allows people to feel like they are in the show, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a huge element of my shows. You know, I when I first got here, one of the first places I went to was Darcelle's. And God bless those ladies, because, you know, I think one of my weakest experience would be to just be on a stage and like look out into that darkness and not be able to see anybody.
Right.
You know?
Right.
If I'm lip syncing, you know, if I'm singing, like, you know, if you're doing comedy, it's a little bit different. You know what I mean? You can do that. But like, imagine just dancing your heart out and performing your artistry and you can't even see the damn audience. You know, that's the scary prospect for me. So, I mean, hats off to them. They are all over it. One of my favorite performers is Kitty Carrion. And she's amazing on that stage. You know what I mean? And she does it. She makes it look effortless. You know, and I really appreciate how that feels.
It is. I've performed on that stage. I think I probably could only probably say about 15 times. And I can tell you that it is a little bit different. And where, so I talked about this on the podcast a long time ago, but so after pandemic, right, everything kind of changed. Like Savannah was saying, like, you know, now people aren't out as late, but one thing that happened with tipping culture is it also shifted to where, like, so at Darcelle's, when you perform, they usually have a bucket that people can walk up and put their tips into, but you can still grab the money from the audience. But the thing is, the audience is actually really far away, even if they're sitting like up close to the stage. So like, you have to like bend over to get that money. And I'm just not that girl. Like, I'm not a bendy over. I'm not a crawly. I'm not a stunty anymore. Like, that's not my journey. That's not how we operate. And it's just super hard to get that coinage. And I know I talk about money on this podcast a lot, but like, I'm gonna tell y'all, like, you can't even get there. I'm like, y'all need to come to me. Like, listen, cause you're not, it's kind of, they don't ever say you can't leave that stage, but it is frowned upon to leave the stage at Darcelle's. It's like one of those hidden rules. So you got to stay up there the whole time.
Really?
Up there.
I didn't know that. I had no idea that was like one of those unofficial. I just thought they just never did.
No, it's a hidden rule. You can leave that stage, but it's like kind of a hidden rule that you don't. You stay up there for the audience, so everybody can see you with their beautiful stage lighting and decor.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's get into a little bit. So that's like what you do. Let's talk about a little bit about who you are, because I feel like, as one of the people who don't really know you at all, I think that this might be a good way to segue into some of those deeper conversations too. Is so, I didn't know that you were a KJ over at Escape for that long. I didn't know that. Like, how did you get into Escape originally? Like, let's start there. Then I'll ask some questions about some things.
So I was in Vancouver when I got here, and I was kind of in a transition in my life where I was just shifting from. I was a federal worker for a while, and I said, you know, this is not how I want to end my life. And so when I came over to Washington, I actually went to baking school. And while I was in baking school, I met some new friends, and we used to go to this other dive bar in Vancouver, and we started this karaoke group. And it was every Monday, you just go do karaoke. And, you know, that group grew very, very fast. We had over like 150 people that would show up on a Monday, you know? And then one day the guy that ran the karaoke asked me if I was interested in doing karaoke. And so I said, yeah. I went from doing karaoke there. And then I went from doing karaoke in one spot to doing karaoke in four. And pretty soon I was doing karaoke 6 days a week. But that's a hard ride to ride. Yeah, that's a hard ride to ride. And so I got to Escape. Escape was one of those places that I came to. And I got to Escape. And it's been a beautiful, I mean, this place is amazing. It's a place where oftentimes queer people come, you know, from whatever circumstances in their lives. And they come around people who have a general warmth. You know, I'm very, very ferocious in my protecting the vibe of this place. I love this place with all my heart, and it's been a blessing that this was the flagship show, which is, you know, keeping it classy. And from here, you know, we just blossom into what we are now. You know, we're in like something like eight venues or something like that. And we're doing shows all across Portland and in Vancouver. And, you know, a large part of that comes from what we cultivated here at Escape first, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So so let me say it this way. So when did you know that you wanted to start producing more regularly after you did the first show? Because, like, normally sometimes people throw, like, their one-off show and they're like, oh, that was fun, but that's not really for me. What made you be like, you know what, I'm going to do this?
So, to be perfectly honest with you, I am, politically, I'm a democratic socialist. It is, a lot of my history is in anti-poverty. I had a nonprofit in Washington called Concerned Humans Against Poverty. It's just something in my mantra, in my life that, you know, I love uplifting people. When we first started the Keeping It Classy show, what I had to take my knowledge of, you know, going around Portland to the different shows, and, you know, there's so many talented people in this city. I mean, there are so many talented people in the city. And instead of wanting to go to every house and just, oh my God, can I work with every house mother or every super popular performer? There was a lot of performers out there. There just wasn't a lot of opportunity out there, but they were talented and they wanted to work. And so, you know, I talk about, you know, my first show having 10 performers. It was a lot of that had to deal with the fact that there were so many deserving performers out there that wanted work and just wanted a spot. And so I said, you know, let's do it. So I did 10 in one show. And then I was like, man, I'm still leaving people out. So we did a brunch and I did 10 in another show. So in 2 days, you'd have 20 performers get out there and get their money. You know, a lot of those first shows were just my friends, family, and supporters coming out. And we just sold out. I mean, we had, I tell you, wait, I heard you curse earlier. Did you curse earlier?
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, I shit you not. We legitimately sold out our first 10 months. 10 months, you know, just selling out shows. And it was, I mean, and you know, I at some point I said, you know, this is not sustainable. We can't have 10, you know, people every time. So it went from 10 to 9, and then it went from 9 to 7, and then, you know, and now we're holding at 6 because we want to make sure we're paying people equitably. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, that's how it started. And then it was, you know, we started with Underbar, and I was like, well, you know, we gotta make sure, you know, these people are getting at least 2 or 3 shows. And I went over to Underbar, and I signed us up for 2 more shows. And for a while, it was only, you know, 4, maybe 5 shows. But mm-hmm. you know, I developed a technique that, you know, and concepts that I felt were fresh, and stories that I felt were fresh. And I had so many deserving people who, you know, anywhere else, I don't think, you know, someone would have been like, hey, do you want a headline? But I was like, definitely, like, you deserve to headline, you know? But I had to make it clear that, you know, headlining to me is, yes, you absolutely deserve to, you know, be front and center. But I wanted to do it in a sense where I could kind of say, yes, it is special, but, you know, all of you deserve it, you know? So, like, headlining, what I tell people is, headlining just means you get a third song. Now, are you talented enough to be called a headliner? Absolutely. But it also just means you get a third song, you know what I mean? And so, like, it's a way to let people know that, yeah, you are deserving of, like, being front and center, but also, you know, being front and center only means that you get this another opportunity to share your artistry and your craft.
Right. No, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that because that does give a little bit more. It can give a little bit more to people who actually, it just gives people a little bit more. That's what I like about it. It just gives people a little bit more. It gives them, it incentivizes them to be a little bit more engaged, which is also beautiful. And I just really like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, we were almost everyone that I have on my main cast, I think, if not all of them, have been a headliner at some point, at least once or twice. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we grow this thing You know, I think that we have a very good, you know, main cast, but we also work with folks that I've never, I make it my mission to work with folks that I haven't worked with before. And through those relationships, I've worked with them multiple times. You know, it's just, I'm truly blessed to have all the opportunities that we have. But I'm even more blessed to get to know all of these wonderful people, even though, you know, I've only been active for 2 years and I really don't know anyone. You know, there's a lot of people I don't know that I don't have the opportunity to talk to or meet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually know how you feel about that. I say this often, but I literally looked at, oh, I actually won't say the poster because that'll just make me seem like a monster. But I was looking at a poster on Facebook today and it had a lot of people on it. And I could tell you, I could maybe name one or two of those people for a Portland show. And I was like, dang, I was like, I felt like I knew everybody during COVID. But then all of these COVID babies popped up afterwards that I just don't know who most of them are. And a lot of people started over the last year, and I don't know who any of them are. And then the performers who are hitting 21 now that can actually be in bar spaces, there was like a lot of them at the same time because they also decided to do drag during COVID. And so like then there's this whole crop of people that I don't really know or recognize, and they're supportive and they're kind and they're sweet. And like I'll have people in my inbox like, hey, Coco, I was at this show and like da 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 da. And like, I try to be nice and kind and be like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I have plenty of opportunity for people I've never seen, which is true. But it's also one of those things where I need to like, make sure I'm being conscientious of that journey and making sure that I'm still giving my audience a good show. Cause there is a balance between giving opportunity, but also making sure your audience is entertained.
Absolutely. You know, I hear the term all the time. It's you know, all drag is valid. And that is certainly true. All drag is valid and mm-hmm. and I love it all. You know, but you have to be able to craft a show that makes sense to the audience. You know what I mean? You have to be able, you can't just put anything anywhere. You know what I mean? There's a place for everything, but mm-hmm. you know, it's you know, I have a show that you're going to be in actually at the Helium Comedy Club. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there's a standard, you know, for these folks who are paying $55 a ticket that mm-hmm. you kind of adhere to, you know?
Right. Wait, is that how much that ticket is?
That ticket is $55.
You repeat it. You're like, that ticket is $55. Because they get food with it, right?
Yeah, they get food with it. They get
I was like, dang, I was like, $55, boo-boo. That's a price thing lot. In that food.
Yeah, they get a lot. Let me tell you, when I saw that spread, I was like, girl, let me go ahead and work here some more.
I love that. That's fantastic. So so a little bit more about on the you side of things. So I guess let me ask this question. This isn't appropriate, but I feel like I need to ask. Are you partnered? Do you have a partner?
Yeah.
Do you? Who's this person? Yeah. Where are they?
So the thing about it, you know what? As funny as it is. Okay, so they are actually kind of a very private person, which I can appreciate. Because when I go home, I you know, we spend too much time talking about what I do anyway. I would prefer to come home and not have to talk about it if I didn't want to. You know what I mean? And they have their own lives. You know, they work a 9-to-5, and they work really, really hard. They just got a promotion. And so we're both really right now, each on our individual journeys, but on a journey.
Has this person ever been out to your shows? Have I seen this person? Just don't know who it is.
Right. Well, at the time that you would have seen them at this, because they used to come to all my shows all the time. But at the time that that they would have been in my shows, you and I hadn't formally met yet. Or we met like once. We met at Applebee's.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that about you. Look at you all partnered and always out in public.
Yeah. Well, you know, in order to make this thing work, you know, I got to be out there. I got to be networking. I got to be doing the things.
Yeah, it's funny. Wolfgang X had posted online about you, which Honey called me out about usurping that post about how you are always out and supporting people's shows. And I was like, that's funny. I never see that bitch at my shows. That's funny.
You know what? You know what? I have been to your shows.
I've been
to 20 of your shows. As a matter of fact, you know what? You know what's so funny? I think I went to your show at Local Lounge. I did not know who you were. We sat out back. It was for the Black History show.
Mm,
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That was out there. I've been researching, you know, I've been out there, you know, researching and seeing who's who, trying to put it together. I'm the worst with the names, though. That's my one weakness. I have to work really hard to remember names.
Oh, it's faces for me. You can give me a name and I'll know that they are a drag performer in this city and probably the last show that they performed in. You want to give me their boy name, which is usually what I see on Facebook or like some funny name on Instagram or something like that or whatever. And then like, I won't know who that person is, but then also just literally what they look like too. Like, dear mm-hmm. God. Oh, like somebody messaged me like, hey, we worked together yesterday. And I'll look at the picture. I'm like, not ringing a bell. I don't know. It's weird. It's like facial blindness is real. Facial blindness is real.
Well, I'm losing my eyesight anyway, so I don't. I wait for somebody to say something. If I hear their voice, I can tell you who they are. But the names. Some of these names, girl. I mean, some of these drag names. I don't even. I have to spell it out. Say it in a mirror to myself over and over again, so I don't mess it up.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I'm telling you.
So let's talk about how you handle drama. I love this. So which is interesting. I've really appreciated you calming the fuck down a little bit. PG-13 warning on that word there. No, because I remember, well, obviously, because we started off with the tiff, but the thing is, I've noticed that when things come to your doorstep nowadays, you are not as reactionary, even though I know certain things still come to your doorstep. I know that the way that you present yourself in the public eye, especially on social media, isn't as loud when it comes to like negative crap that happens and whatever. It's a little bit more empathetic, sympathetic, like, you know, I had to cancel some shows and do, you know, and I'm feeling really down on myself versus like, you know, what it was used to be when it was like, oh my God, I'm a failure, y'all. Like, all y'all hate me. I'm a failure. I'm a terrible person. I'm like, damn, one need to calm down. I'm like, so I appreciate that growth, but let's talk about it though. Like, let's talk about, like, where does this insecurity in yourself come from?
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, when you start these shows, and again, I did start with the intention of, you know, how many people can I book? How can I make sure all these people get paid? How can I make sure, you know, I'm making a positive impact in their lives? That's a kind of a double-edged sword, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because, like, you worry now. Like, now when something's not doing as well, you are worrying about other people's bills. You know what I mean? And so, like, the thing about it is that I had to really go through the fire on this thing for 2 years and just kind of realize that, you know, as much as I want to help everybody, you can't help everybody. Sometimes you got to, you know, just, you know, sometimes helping them is just making a tough decision and saying, hey, you know, yeah, we got to cancel the show this month, but we are doing this so that this show can last, you know, for years and years, you know. Because there's nothing like showing up, losing money. Everyone's losing money, you know, and it's, you know, it doesn't feel good. Sometimes you got to make that hard call. And I think that, you know, with as many shows, because it doesn't sound like much when you say over 2 years. But if you think about it, you know, that's 2 years of doing at least 6 shows a month for every month, working with at least 6 people. A month for every month, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you kind of learn as you go, but you definitely learn. Like, experience is probably the most efficient yet brutal mentor you'll ever have. It's going to teach you, you know, and you're going to learn whether you like it or not, you know. That's unless true. You quit. And I don't have that quit shit in me, you know. I can't quit. Because I got too much riding on this.
No, and I get it because that's kind of the same way I am. I will work my ass off for some of these shows no matter what because it just, I don't know, it's just in me to not feel, my insecurity comes from the fact is I was told before I moved to Portland that I wouldn't succeed in a bigger pond because like I was super successful with drag and the place I came from. And I was told that I would move back to that small city because I wouldn't be as successful. I would, you know, people were telling me that I, you know, wasn't going to make it. And I always had this thing on my I always like, and I believe in hard work. Like, I don't believe yeah. that I deserve. I believe if I work hard, I should deserve. Like, it's not entitlement. It's just like you want to see some benefit from the work that you put into the your like whatever craft it is that you're doing. And so yeah. my insecurities will come from be like, dang, I thought I worked really hard on this. And what usually happens is I'll feel bad, but it's cool because it'll be like, okay, this didn't go well. I'm going to work harder. Like, and make it go better next time, which was a weird mindset to get in, because when I was in my early 20s, I felt like a massive failure.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you this. When I first studied the model of success is like you just kind of toil away and you learn as you go, right? I mean, you just, mm-hmm. you know, you what they call it, you pay your dues, right? You go through the trenches. Fortunately for me, before the pandemic, I was able to kind of study, you know, what was going on and where. But after the pandemic, it was, I'll never forget this. I kind of happened upon you, accidentally, but like you were working like everywhere, and I was already doing karaoke, and I was just kind of like, I was kind of noticing like how you were kind of spread out around town and in different neighborhoods and stuff. And I said, you know, mm-hmm. that's really smart. Actually, that's actually very smart, because you know, trying to just do everything you want downtown, that's, there's only so much room, and you immediately mm-hmm. step into somebody else's economy when you try to do that. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I was lucky enough to start at Escape and then go over to Underbar. And that just kind of, I was just kind of in the north, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so like, I got to learn lessons being in new spaces, like kind of like new to drag. Now, my show wasn't the first drag show at Escape. Yeah. The first drag show at Escape, to my knowledge, or consistent drag show, monthly drag show, was Sequin McQueen's show, Mixed right. Bag and Open Bag. And so I had seen that show many times, mm-hmm. and you know, and studied that show as well. And I was just like, you know, learning from, you know, taking the good from all of those things. And then applying it, and then getting the cold, hard reality, you know, of, you know, experience, you know, it teaches you to calm down, because you can have a heart attack only so many times before you die. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it's kind of yep. like, it's kind of like you have to calm down, you know, or you're not going to make it. So, you know, I definitely get to run, because a lot of people walk before me, and I will never take that for granted. And the work that I do hopefully lays the groundwork for the people behind me to be able to do it easier too. Because I, you know, you were the model for me, as mm-hmm. as other producers as well were the model for me. But you in particular, mm-hmm. I can only hope that someone takes what I learned from y'all and sees that it does. You can be good to people, and you can be good to, you know, your venues. And you can be respectful, and you can, you know, do all these things and be successful, you know, at the same time, right. you know?
Yeah. So here's an interesting point about that. The being successful, finding the model and understanding who you are and understanding insecurities too, is also, I feel like how you treat people at the end of the day will also have a longing impression, because intent versus impact always comes into the picture, right? My intent might be a good thing, but what is my impact? Like, if my intent is to go up to somebody and say, like, hey, I think that your performance could be better because, like, you could make more money if you did X. That impact on them might make them want to quit drag or make them feel like they're not good enough. If I want my impact to be long-lasting and positive, I should boost people up enough to be like, hey, like, gosh, I really, really liked what you did with this number. I want to put you in more shows. Maybe consider doing some fast numbers. I think that would help you out, like, reach this next level that you need to reach. And then that impact is like, okay, I'm going to work harder to get into those spaces. And, like, so that's a long-lasting impact. And I think about that often with drag shows and drag show producing, because my model, like you were talking about, I actually changed it recently, but it used to be, I want it to be called Drag Trivia At, or Drag Show At, or Drag Bingo At, like, and it just be the name of the bar. So it gives the bar mm-hmm. its clout and notoriety. And the funny thing Absolutely. Is that was working, but what happened was the bars wanted fun titles for their drag shows. Like the bars were coming back, like, but we want like a fun like name for it and da 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 instead of just like our bar name. And I'm like, but people sometimes can get confused about what the hell the thing is. If I'm calling it like, which is me and Autumn's favorite name to call it Pussy Poppin', like Pussy Poppin' Wednesdays now on Friday, that doesn't say drag show. That just says Pussy Poppin' Wednesday. And so I did change the model back to using
Pussy Poppin' is just, for some people, Pussy Poppin' is enough, you know? Listen, you know, when I started, come back to a skip. I started with Keeping It Classy, and then, you know, Underbar does, their titles in the name. Every venue is different. Every venue wants something different. I still use the model that you were just talking about, especially for bingo. Sometimes you got to say, you know, this is an adult. You have to make it simple for people to digest. You know what I mean? That's what it comes down to. It's like, maybe the title just needs to be Adult Bingo at Bar Maven. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the situation calls for that. And then maybe it's just kind of a concept show, you know, and then the title means much more, you know. Different things call for different occasions. I think you're right on both of those. I mean, if they want a fun title, hell, I'll call it fucking Mickey Mouse's Playhouse. Just sign the fucking check.
Oh, that's so true. Okay, so I have a couple of more questions for you, actually, before we get off this podcast to figure out a little bit more about who Ms. O'Bennington actually is. So one of the questions is that I got asked to ask you is people keep wanting to know why I call you Camilla. And the funny thing is, a lot of the white people think it's because of Princess Di and Camilla, which that's funny. And I'm super down for that. It's somewhat where it came from, but not really. Camilla is just used as like a black name from like an auntie that like is somebody that you're scolding. And so like what happened was me and Savannah were in a group chat because I was booked in one of their shows at Pink Cottontails and Pink Rabbit. And I hadn't gotten any promotion. I hadn't gotten any information, no music, nothing. But I saw people promoting the show. Because I'm going to out this secret because I'd have to have a little bit of a tea out here. But I know that Savannah has a group chat with people that she regularly works with. So she posts it in there. I'm not in this group chat, right? So I'm seeing my name being posted on the internet with a poster. And I haven't even given a picture. Like, I just like, what's happening? And so I said, Camilla. What is the information for this? And literally, Savannah just writes, why are you calling me Camilla? Literally what the person said. And then it just stuck. It just stuck from that point because I was like, Camilla, like, listen, I know church is on Sunday at 3 p.m. because it's the late shift, but listen, if you get some time, can you send me this damn promotion? And that's where it came from. And then when the Princess Di thing came up, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, no. And I love that because, you know what? Let me say something. Everyone has an opinion about, like, you know, us, the dynamic that has been over, you know, the last year and a half. And so everything that is put out there online, people, they grab their own conclusions from those things. And I, you know, when we started, you know, very openly communicating online through Facebook and such, I mean, you were putting names on there. I was laughing, I was dying. There was so long, and then you settled on Camilla, and I was like, "Oh, this is perfect because that's my Lady Di. That's we Gucci right there. We good. That we'll be in the tabloids forever. Portland's notorious side chick to Lady Di, drag Oprah."
Oh my god, that's good. I know, I like it because it has layers. Oh, and so let me explain this too, because for the listeners, because they're just going to know this. So I had been, because long drag names, even though we talked about how positive they are, because they have a long history of having long drag names, and people they mean stuff to people. But the thing is, like, every time, because so Savannah is a meme queen, like what she does with her social media, she'll like post memes and she'll like make a comment on them, and like folks will comment and participate. And so every once in a while, they would just be like, too wild or too sexy or too dirty. And since Savannah is technically, it just sounds like a Southern lady name. Like anytime it was like too dirty, I would go on there and just change her name to something that was just longer and ridiculous. Like I'd be like I'd be like Savannah, Starkeisha, Camille, but da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What are you doing? And she's like, you almost got it, honey. You're just so close to the actual name. And so it just became this running gag. Name. So that's where it came from.
And she settled on Camilla.
I got rid of all the names, didn't use one of them, and just settled on
Camilla. Yes, you did. Yep. I know whenever I hear it, I'm in trouble. It's okay.
Oh, gosh.
To be fair.
Fantastic.
To be fair, I would like to say that I did forget to sing you that promo. I did forget to sing you that promo. But listen, the show was doing fantastic. That show sold out. I was like, you know, you didn't even need to promote it. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's fine. You can't even yell. You can't even. So producers will yell at cast, right? And I know that Savannah's done this to her cast with shows that, you know, don't do super well. You know, you tell your cast like, hey, y'all, we're not selling tickets. Like, I need y'all to get out there and promote. And like when you're headlining, you really should be promoting, or else it's like, hey, why am I paying you extra money? You've only promoted it once, right? But where this was happening is why it kind of ended up being a joke, is because by the time I got all the assets, there were like 10 tickets left. And so it's like I think I shared it once, and then there was like 3 tickets left, and then it just sold. And then even in the group chat, Camilla was like, she's like, there are 2 tickets left, y'all. Let's make sure to get out there. And I said, Camilla, why are you lying to this cast? It's sold out. And the tea about the situation is, and I think she already knows this, I did this intentionally because I thought it was funny because I make her look foolish, is the second she said there's 2 tickets left, I went and bought them myself just so I could use the joke. Saw. Camilla, it sold out.
I saw it. I was like, oh, look, praise Drag Oprah. Thank you, Drag Oprah. I will take that money. Thank you so much. And I truly appreciate you.
Oh, my goodness.
I wanted to ask you, how was Gail? Autumn Rains. That's what I'm talking about. You're Gail.
I was like, who's Gail? I think it's Autumn. So it's funny. So Autumn, it's so interesting, this whole dynamic that I have with Gail over here. So me and Autumn do all of our gigs together, and a lot of it's just because I'm too old. And I know that actually something that Savannah hasn't mentioned on this podcast yet, since she's given away some of her gigs. Not given away, but like lets other people like kind of run certain things about them, you know, so she can go on to do other things. It's the same with me and Autumn. Autumn is just like, she's my roommate, sure, and my best friend, and we do a lot of our gigs together, but there's a lot of gigs I don't do with her because I need 5 minutes. I am 37 years old. I'm tired. Like, I need a little bit of a moment. And honestly, Autumn is insufferable as all get out. And so being around her too much is not good for either of us, because I will murder that girl someday.
True. Why are you talking about Gail like that? You need to stop talking about Gail like that, okay? Gail be out here working hard. Saw Gail out last night cartwheeling, okay? In the parking lot. Yes, getting work, all right? She's out here promoting, okay? She was like, you going to be a karaoke? Then she did a backflip in the parking lot, okay? So I'm going to be at karaoke next week, okay?
Oh, my God. That's funny. This is funny because, like, so even when I'm performing and Camilla is in the space, I do this thing because every time Camilla is at a drag show, I don't know how y'all feel about this, and you can let me know in the comments. I always feel like she's interviewing us at drag shows because she has so many. Like, she's always there with her notebook. Like, there's no reason for it to be out. But she has it out, and she's sitting there front row in her sunglasses if she's in drag, and she's just staring at you, making no reaction. She barely claps. And like, I'm just like, this is not American Idol, bitch. I will come for you. And so like, every time I'm performing, I won't even do nothing. I'll just go to her, put my hand out. And this last time she shook it. She said, thank you so much for coming. I was like, I'm gonna hit this girl.
Let me tell you something. When you came over and put your hand out, I was like, Oprah, I thought, are you giving me money? Like, I said, Drag, why is Drag Over asking me for money? She got my money. Like, what's going on? Remember you? Oh my God, I will never forget this. You were performing at Suki's I think it was last week, and you went around with that bucket. And you said, oh no, y'all didn't put enough money in this thing. I think y'all, and you made your rounds to everybody. And then you came up behind me and shook that thing. Shook that thing so hard next to my head. I dropped that money in there, okay? I was like, that, I never dropped money so hard in my life.
I am a menace. Oh my God, I'm a menace. Oh goodness. This last thing that I want to touch on is it's two things. So real quick, what's your future? What is your goal with what is your goal? Like, what is your goal with what you're doing right now? And I know you've kind of touched on it, but let's talk about 5 years from now. Like, what do you see for Savannah O. Bennington, Queen of Fun, doing a lot of drag shows? Or like, what do you see? Do you see TV, or do you see movies, or do you see different states, or something like that? Let's hit on that.
So from a Rogue Apostle standpoint, I am slowly getting that to become what will be known as a production and booking agency. So what I'm doing with my main cast right now is we're cultivating their portfolios so that, for private gigs, I tell everyone, I say, have 10 songs that you could do, passionately, but you could also do them in your sleep. Build your portfolio to more than that. But I want you to have 10 go-tos, because, the whole point of this is that every performance and every show that you go to is about that next show and the next performance. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I want to book you for private events. I want to book you, at these different bars, and I don't want it to just be bars. We got this deal with Helium and we're in that space. And I want to create this network of venues that, you could come in to Lucky Star, an open call drag show, and eventually within the same network, working along, generally the same people, you can work your way all the way up to Helium, and you wouldn't have to wait 4 years to do it. All it takes is hard work. I want you to be able to know that if you just work hard, it's not about how much money you spend to a point, right? I don't want everybody that, I don't want everybody to think that you have to look a certain way to get in front of a certain audience. Yeah, you got to be professional. And yeah, you got to take care of yourself. And yeah, you got to, present your art. But, I want to make it a lot easier for someone to be able to come into this scene and truly perform their heart and get in front of the audience that they deserve to get in front of. And, I started my journey from KJing. Eventually I made it to the radio, and then now I'm doing this. I want to see something where, we never have to go back to the point where people have to pay their dues for a potential opportunity. Those days are done for me. And, if I can change it in my own economy, and then my people go out and they work and they get to some working conditions that are shit, I want them to be able to look that fucking producer in the eye and say, no, I'll pass. I have other opportunities. So, this is about, uplifting, performers, working with venues and captivating audiences. That's what this is for me. And so, this is a story I think that's going to go from eventually that will not leave, but become more than Portland. I want to start, I'm building relationships outside of Portland right now, substantial relationships. And I want to soon, within the next year, have a venue in Seattle where people can go and we can set up a monthly show and people from Portland can go up to Seattle and do it there and also work with local talent there. You know what I mean? This is about, being inclusive and not leaving anyone out, try to do the best job that we can. That's all I'm trying to do here.
Yeah. That's funny, cause that really aligns with what my goal for Portland is, which is putting Portland on the map in a national stage. My goal for Portland, which I don't know if I've ever told you, so it's probably just a good time to say it before the last question, is my goal for Portland is I really want to, I have my own dreams for my drag, and which we talked about yesterday, the difference between what I'm doing with my drag versus what I'm trying to do as a producer. And what I'm trying to do as a producer is I'm trying to put Portland on the map to where I have people, and it's funny, I have so many things that I can't announce yet, like so many things that are just working, which is so beautiful, that are coming to Portland, that are going to raise our national recognition in a lot of different ways, and like be able to have this hub of where I can get these bigger headliners and names out here in our spaces. So that way, it's not going to be, because like RuPaul often overlooks Portland in a lot of ways. We have people that should have been on Dragula already, but they haven't been. And like,
Hold on, Coco. Let me stop you. Can I stop you right there, real quick?
Yeah.
Listeners, this opinion is Coco Jim Holly's opinion only. Savannah opinion in is just sitting here listening, just like you are. Please continue, Coco. You won't have me on Twitter.
So yeah, you'll have me on Twitter. No, and I just I know that RuPaul tends to overlook Portland, or maybe RuPaul just doesn't think our drag is good enough, which I don't think is true. I think our drag is great here. It's beautiful. We had the oldest working drag queen until they passed RAP. Like, absolutely give Darcelle her flowers. But the thing is, it's I want to raise Portland's national footprint to where people don't overlook this community as a whole. Like, they can look at our people, like from the colonoscopy, who's from New York, or Shaniqua Vault, who has a lot of recognition in Vegas and across the country and things like that. And, you know, Flawless being on Painting with Raven, and the Camp Wanakiki folks, and like all these other people, and House of Ada and Jayla. However, those are people part of this scene that all amplify this scene. So why are people not knocking down our door for X, Y, and Z, right? So I know that you have some stuff in the fire, whatever, that can't be announced. I have some stuff in the fire can't be announced. I think that it's going to just consistently improve, which I always say, improve the drag economy, to where people are going to be like busting down doors to like have their shows stop here and be a part of it, working with locals, not just having their own show at some theater or something like that. No shade, but like, you know, working with locals when they come here, they're like, hey, this scene is amazing. I'm doing this like one woman show. I need five people, right? You know, things like that. And I really want that to happen. And then I have my own goals for myself as a drag artist that, you know, I've talked about plenty of times, but that's what I want to see for this scene specifically.
Yeah, and I think we're getting closer, honestly.
I think
the dynamic has changed. I think that there are so many phenomenal producers out there that are, yes, doing their own thing. But I even see it now that, you know, there are people that those producers are working together. Sometimes they're in each other's shows. Sometimes they're, you know, just helping talk and amplify each other. I think we're closer to that type of model than we think. I think we're closer to it than we're not. I don't think we've ever been closer to it, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's so close. I think it's so close. Yeah. So for the last question, if you got into a bar fight and you wanted to win the bar fight, what three Portland drag artists would you, or Pacific Northwest drag artists, would you have on your team to help you win, and why?
And this is a dive bar?
This is a dive bar fight.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to count them all as one, and I'm going to say the House of Condiments, because I feel, Nacho's going to carry everyone on her back, and she's going to fuck some shit up. She's going to be fucking it up with a shot of Jaeger, you know what I mean? I feel like the whole House of Condiments should count as one. also, you know what? You know, she does a mean cartwheel, so I'm going to choose Gail, Autumn Rains. I think at least she would be a distraction if she started fucking cartwheeling. They'd be at least be like, what the fuck is this? That'll buy me some time.
Oh, dang.
Oh, my goodness. Honey Heart. I would pick Honey Heart. Yeah, because Honey Heart is she's mean. She got a look that'll stop fucking cars, okay? She will hex your ass. That's my girl.
She got a mean look. She got a mean
stare. She got a mean stare. She'll fuck you up.
Ooh,
those nails are not just for show.
I love her. She's one of my favorite people. I love Honey to death.
Absolutely. Ooh.
So, go ahead and tell the kids all of your social media, and then I'll also have it up on our website at avagemasecretpodcast.com.
Yes, honey. Yes. Okay. So you can find me on Instagram at Savannah O. Bennington. I'm on the Facebooks. I'm not quite on the TikToks because I don't really get it yet, but I'm working on it. Okay. You can follow the Rogue Apostles radio show on Eventbrite. Buy them tickets, honey. You know, go come to our free shows. We just want to see you. We just want to see you. We everywhere right now. We in here. You know what? I should have had my DJ Khaled. Another one. We here.
Oh God, kill me.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So listeners, go ahead and follow Savannah, who I call Camilla, on every one of their social media platforms. Pay attention to what they're doing. They do book a lot of local artists, and like as we said before, please buy pre-sale tickets. It does help us out a lot. Follow us on Instagram, because that also helps us out to let our community know that we're doing the good work, get our visibility out there. Even if you don't live in Portland, please do as such. Even if you don't live in Washington, please do as such. It'd be really helpful for all of us to get our names out there as we continue to grow our scene and make our drag economy a little bit better.
Listen, Coco, I just want to say, Drag Oprah, I love you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Before I sign off in here, I just want to say thank you. If I could just be your Wendy Williams, that would make me happy. Okay, if I could just bask in the shadow, honey. That's all I want.
Oh, for the love of God! Yes, you are more than welcome to be the Wendy Williams. You know, I like Oprah. Yes. Like, that is such a compliment. I love Oprah too.
What are you talking about? I love me Oprah too.
I love you some damn Oprah. She great.
Yeah. All right. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Say bye to the children.
Bye, kids. We will see you out there in the fucking world. Please do not come into my DMs complaining to me about what Coco Jim Holiday said on this episode, because I didn't do it.
Please send them directly in that way.
Don't send me your hate mail, okay?
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Jim Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.
Tune in, fabulous listeners. We've got a sizzling announcement for all you drag aficionados and karaoke connoisseurs. Join us every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. for an unforgettable night of glamour and entertainment at Misfits Bar and Lounge, located at 2530 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. Hosted by the mesmerizing Autumn Rains and captivating Coco Jim Holiday, this drag queen karaoke show will have you singing, dancing, and living your best life. Let loose and showcase your vocal prowess alongside these extraordinary queens as they create an atmosphere bursting with energy, laughter, and pure fabulousness. Mark your calendars and gather your squad for a Wednesday night that promises to be nothing short of spectacular. Whether you're a seasoned performer or a first-time diva, Misfits Bar and Lounge is a place to be for an unforgettable evening of entertainment, empowerment, and endless fun. Don't miss out on the fabulous extravaganza. Join us this Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and let your inner star shine at Misfits Bar and Lounge, Portland's newest queer plus space.